Okay, now we are back to the regular verses from the fifth canto, fifth chapter. Lord Rishabhdev's teaching, this is verse number 28. Now these verses are all in prose, so that we don't generally chant the prose. So what we'll do is we'll do the word for word. So just repeat. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Evam, in this way, Anusasya, after instructing, Atmajan, his sons, Swayam, personally, Anusistan, highly educated in culture, Api, although, loka anushasana artam, just to instruct the people, maha anubhava, the great personality, paramam sruhit, everyone's sublime well-wisher, bhagavan, the supreme personality of Godhead, Rishba Apadesa, who is celebrated and known as Rishabhdeva. Upasama Shilanam, of persons who have no desire for material enjoyment. Uparatta Karmanam, who are no longer interested in fruitive activities. Mahamuninam, who are sannyasis. Bhakti, devotional service. Jnana, perfect knowledge. Vairagya, detachment. Lakshanam, characterized by. Parahamsaya, of the best of human beings. Dharmam, the duties. Upasikshamana, instructing. Swatanaya, of his sons. Sata, 100. Jyestam, the eldest. Parama Bhagavatam, the topmost devotee of the Lord. Bhagavad Jana Paryanam, a follower of the devotees of the Lord, Brahmas and Vaishnavas, Bharatam Bart Maharaj, Dharani Palayana, with the view to ruling the world, Abhisiksya, placing on the throne, Swayam, personally, Bhavane, at home, Eva, although, Urvarita, remaining, Sarira Matra, the body only, Parigraha, accepting, Unmatta, a madman. Eva, exactly like. Gadgana Paridana, taking the sky as his dress. Prakirna Kesa, having scattered hair. Atmani, in himself. Aropita, keeping. Ahavaniya, the Vedic fire. Brahmavartat, from the place known as Brahmavarta. Pravaraja, began to travel all over the world. Translation. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, "Thus, the great well-wisher of everyone, the Supreme Lord Rishabdev, instructed his own sons. Although they were perfectly educated and cultured, he instructed them just to set an example of how a father should instruct his sons before retiring from family life. Sannyasis who are no longer bound by fruitive activities and who have taken to devotional service after all their material desires have been vanquished also learn by these instructions. Lord Rishabdev instructed his 100 sons, of whom the eldest, Bart, was very advanced devotee and a follower of Vaishnavas. In order to rule the whole world, the Lord enthroned his eldest son on the royal seat. Thereafter, although still at home, Lord Rishabdev lived like a madman, naked and with disheveled hair. Then the Lord took the sacrificial fire within himself, and he left Brahmavarta to tour the whole world." Srila Prabhupada's purport. Actually, the instructions given to Lord Rishabhadev's sons were not exactly meant for his sons, because they were already educated and highly advanced in knowledge. Rather, these instructions were meant for sannyasis who intend to become advanced devotees. Sannyasis must abide by Lord Rishabhadev's instructions while on the path of devotional service. Lord Rishabhadev retired from family life and lived like a naked madman, even while still with his family. Om Agyan Timirandasya Girajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Swam Padanti Kam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, Srila Prabhupada speaks on this verse in one of his lectures. He mentions this is the ideal way to rule, is through monarchy. And he's explaining that throughout the history of the world, there were many great leaders, such as King Yudhisthira, Maharaj Parikshit, and he also mentions Lord Ram. In mentioning Lord Ram, Prabhupada mentions that as a great leader, a monarch, before one can actually take the throne, two qualifications or two considerations are foremost. And that is, one, that the leader has to be qualified. He has to have the qualifications in order to lead. In other words, he has to have the welfare of the citizens at heart and able to supply the needs and the welfare of the citizens, which includes protection and maintenance and proper, what we say, law and order also. But the second thing Prabhupada mentions, and he gives the example, is that when Ram was in the forest for 14 years, Bart was ruling the throne, his brother. Bart had accepted the throne only because there was no other person to accept it. He did it, of course, on the order of Lord Ram, because Lord Ram wanted him to rule while he was gone in his absence. But he ruled in such a way as that he took the shoes of Ram and put them on the throne. And he was ruling as a representative of Ram. And he saw Ram as the actual ruler. Although his mother Kaikeyi wanted him to rule the throne, he was very much disturbed about the whole situation, which caused him to be forced to accept the throne and his brother, who he loved so dearly, and so everyone loved so dearly, to have to go to the forest. So he accepted that rule only because of Ram's pleading with him to do that, because somebody needed to rule the kingdom while Ram was in the forest, and Ram was not about to change his mind. And so he did. And there's a place, actually, you can still go today where he actually lived, Bart Maharaj. It's called Nandagram, and it's right near Ayodhya. And it's a little, kind of like a little village with a beautiful pond and some small structures there. And he lived there, and he ruled the kingdom from a distance. And he never cut his hair, never cut his nails, and lived like a, pretty much a madman. But he still was in the position of the, considered to be the, what we say, Ritvik ruler in place of. And he only drank, or only ate barley cooked in cow urine for 14 years as an austerity. And of course, Ram, after he returned, after killing the demon Ravana and recapturing or rebringing back his wife, it was a grand celebration of the return of Lord Ram to the city, which was very glorious. But one thing, when Ram got back, he asked Bart, and this is the point Srila Prabhupada makes about this verse, are the people following the Vanashram system? Are the people following the Vanashram system? Are they living according to their Vanas and Ashram and following like that? And Bart gave them the report, yes, they are. And he said that that was the condition for Ram to take the throne. If there was something different in the response, he would have not accepted it. So Prabhupada goes on to say, the king has to be qualified and the citizens have to live according to the proper standard for life within the kingdom. In other words, they have to follow Vana and Ashram. If one of them, either the king or the ruler, the leader, the monarch, or the citizens are not following, that is imperfect rule, and that'll always be what we say problems. And Prabhupada goes on to explain how today, in today's society, no one follows anything. And the leaders are just elected from the citizens who are of the same nature. And therefore we have, what you have is chaos today. Prabhupada says most the population of today's world are exploited by misleaders. They lead only from the for the position of power and what we say personal aggrandizement. If there is some good in them, it doesn't really manifest because in the system they rule within, they are surrounded by people who are avaricious and greedy. And therefore, they can't do very much, even if they have some, what we say, sentiment geared to helping the people. But that's not usually the case in today's society, because a person who leads has to be qualified. In other words, they have to have kshatriya nature. They have to be able to do three things. Give protection to the people from harm. Welfare, in other words, take care of all their material needs as far as providing what is needed in order to live. And they also have to be able to organize the kingdom in such a way as the, everything goes on nicely. And they're also guided by Brahminical advisors. Not that, like today, nobody listens to anything. We were hearing about how Ravana, he just likes to do whatever he wants, and he takes advice only if he likes the advice. And he's not so much interested in leading for what we say the benefit of others, but for his own preconceived ideas on how things should go on according to his own selfish interests. The citizens become the servant of the king in order to facilitate the king's desires like that. And if the citizens benefit in some case, that's because it works for the king also. So this is much today's leadership. That's why Prabhupada said the world's in chaos today. They have what is called democracy. And Prabhupada said he used to call it demon crazy. Where, you know, everyone gets together who has no qualifications to make decisions, and then they take some what they call pax populi, or the major vote amongst those who are unqualified, and then decisions are made like that. And then they legislate accordingly. So therefore, what we have in today's world is a very topsy-turvy society, and people are victimized by that. Even good people are, what we say, exploited. And then they become bad because of bad leaders like that. So Rishabhdev, he's retiring, and he's leaving the charge to his... He has 100 sons. And he mentions that 50 of them were actually, what we say, devotees. And one was outstanding. His name was Bart Maharaj. And we, of course, going through this chapter, you heard some of the qualities of Bart Maharaj. And you'll go, as this canto goes on, you'll hear more and more about Bart Maharaj. He was the best of all his sons. Of course, later on he got a little in trouble. He fell in love with something he shouldn't have fell in love with. But that happens even to great souls. But that's another story. But here, he retired timely and he empowered his sons, or his son, to take over the reign like that. So Prabhupada explains that the, unless there is an establishment of saintly rule within the society, or proper rule, at least based on moral principles, there will never be peace in the world. So in this Krishna consciousness movement, Prabhupada actually wanted us to somehow be a element to guide society in the right way. And when Prabhupada started the movement back in the early days, in the 70s, he saw the need for devotees to take power within the society. And he created a party called In God We Trust Party. And some devotees actually ran for president. It became an asset in the sense that it gave us a voice to speak the philosophy in a broader sense. But when Prabhupada saw how things were going on, both with the devotees and how the society was so corrupt, he said, stop the whole thing. He said, what is the use? You know, we don't want to get involved with all this because it's dirty business. And therefore he said, then we just preach Krishna consciousness like that. So, but you see, whenever there is powerful leadership who facilitates religious principles, society goes on nicely. So Prabhupada wanted us to reach some of the important people within the society who have positions and who can make a difference to influence them to become Krishna conscious. We preach to each other, and we also preach to the common folk. But to try to make inroads into more people with bigger positions has great merit when something successful is established, because they can influence so many people. I remember I was just watching the 50th anniversary celebration of ISKCON last year in Calcutta, where thousands of people gathered in order to honor Srila Prabhupada's leaving India and Bombay, and then of course sailing over the ocean and arriving in America. So last year was the 50th year anniversary of Prabhupada's arriving in America. This is the 50th year anniversary of ISKCON Society. So in that particular gathering, there were many important people who were speaking, who had positions glorifying Srila Prabhupada. And one very powerful personality, I can't remember her position, her name was, God, I used to know her name. Anyway, she was a politician and also had worked in different areas of the government. One of the devotees in the Calcutta temple wanted to give her Radhana Swami's book, The Journey Home. So he found that she was doing a particular conference where she was a keynote speaker, so he arrived there. And so, Jai Sisi Panchatattva Ki Jai. So he, this devotee, Brahmachari, in the temple, came and met her. And he gave her her book. He gave her Radhanath Swami's book. And he said, this is about yoga, about spirituality. She had some connection with yoga societies also. So she graciously accepted the book. And then later on she started to read it. And she became so engrossed in the book that she wanted to find out more. And it just so happened in the back of the book there was a number for the Calcutta temple. And so she calls the Calcutta temple, right? And who answers the phone? The person who gave her the book. Amazing, right? And then she connects with that person. And then he's talking to her and he says, we have this big event. Please come and speak. So she's inspired to come and she speaks. And she gave a 14-minute speech. And she glorified the book so much that she said, I'm going to have all my followers read this book. I have 3 million people who work under my care in various aspects of government and other social organizations. I'm going to make sure they all read it. And then she said to the whole audience, you should all read it too. She was like powerful. She had such shakti. I wish I could remember her name. Kiran Bedi. Yeah, Kiran Bedi. If you can look her up, you find a little bit about her. Such a powerful... So this is an example when you hit a big person who is somewhat favorable. They have so much influence and they want to do something. She said, we should make a movie out of the book. She said, not we should. We're going to make a movie out of this book. She was so, what we say, fired up about the whole process. So, yeah, this is an example how when, if we can reach bigger people with Krishna consciousness, how much they can influence others like that. Buddhism spread throughout India because of one king named Ashok. Ashok was, he became Buddhist and therefore he made the kingdom Buddhist under him. King Birhambir in Vanavishnupur, when he was preached to by Srinivasacharya, became a Vaishnava. He was a dacoit. He had stolen the books of the devotees. Srinivasacharya had came to his kingdom, got the books back, and preached to the king. The king was so much inspired by Srinivasacharya's preaching that he made him the head minister in the kingdom, to preach to the other ministers and to be his spokesman for spirituality. And at one point, the king became so much absorbed in Vaishnavism that he had the power too. And he was kind of like a ruthless guy. So he ordered everybody, you're all now Vaishnavas. Of course, that's a little heavy preaching, but it's another example in the history of preaching when a big person becomes favorable, how much they can influence, you know, the world. So we're preaching to all levels of society, from people in jail all the way up to politicians, congressmen, presidents, and as many. Prabhupada reached a lot of big people also in his short 11 years with us on the planet. And so many people became what we say very much favorable to Krishna consciousness. So this is a type of preaching we should look into a little bit more, how to reach big people. It doesn't take much. It just takes a little bit of planning and organization and a little bit of, if you know people who know big people, you can also somehow reach them with Prabhupada's books like that. Or I think in your country, many years ago, the president of the country, he came to the temple, didn't he? And he also took prasadam. He was twice, I heard, he took prasadam. We met him at a book fair, wasn't it? I think it was. Yeah.
He was the regular here at the restaurant.
He came to the restaurant, yeah. Like that. But he was somewhat renounced. He didn't have, you know, he was about ready to retire. He wasn't much of a politician. He was more of a a person who was like a recluse, right? But he had good, many, many good qualities like that. Then became favored to Krishna consciousness. So these are wonderful examples. So Rishabhdev instructs his son dutifully, empowers one of his sons, the most outstanding, who is most eager and qualified to accept his instructions to lead, and then he retires timely. Not like today's politicians, they, Stipalba said they stay in office until, you know, they die, or until somebody kills them, either one, something like that. So they're, you know, they sometimes are so senile they can't even, you know, do anything. They hang on to these, their positions. And therefore people are, what we say, cheated by people who are not qualified to lead like that. And then there's always some scandal, right? There's always some scandal centered around some of the politicians. So, you know, these people are not qualified to lead. So where are the Kshatriyas nowadays? Are there any Kshatriyas left? Real Kshatriyas, people who actually have qualifications to lead like that. But they're not given a chance to take positions anyway, because it's all run by rogues and thieves and big, powerful businessmen who have unlimited amounts of money, who can influence whatever they want to influence as far as putting whoever they want within office. So the governments are run like business organizations, more or less, to make more and more money for various gigantic corporations like that. And to somehow or other gain more and more influence in other areas of the world so they can keep their businesses expanding more and more. And they're not even Vaishyas. Mm-hmm. A real Vaishya would never do that. They are only in name only businessmen. They're very crafty and making money and exploiting the material resources. And they also know how to influence big, powerful people. Everything today is based on money. Okay, so Rishabhdev, any questions or comments? Leadership, what is qualified leadership? We heard about Ram this last few days, how righteous, how upright he was, how much he was dedicated to principles as opposed to personal desires and positions. Yes, Maharaj.
One of the Prabhupada's strategies, although he certainly, he himself met with quote important people, but he expressed his strategy that he wanted to influence people in general, because he said that the people in general still had some kind of voice within the possibility of choosing a government. He said we work too much on the governmental platform, on the leadership platform, the government, the current politicians, so they don't go all the time.
Mm.
And therefore, getting some of them favorable is not... That is not sometimes a permanent situation.
Yeah, that's true.
Influence the people in general who elect the politicians, and they can actually make a change in society. They can elect persons who will actually make a change in society.
Yeah, but he did both. Yeah, we do both. But generally, yeah, they come and go. Yeah. George Harrison. And we also have this senator from Hawaii. She's, well, of course, yeah, Tulsi Gabbard. She's actually initiated devotee of Siddha Sarup, yeah. But she follows Krishna consciousness. So, yeah. It's not like we should focus on them only, of course, but It's part of our preaching. Lord Chaitanya's movement is to reach everybody. We're preaching in jails. These are the people that don't have any influence. Even within, they can't even control their own lives, what to speak about. But the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is meant to be given everywhere. And there are also certain people who are in public office who are initiated devotees who can influence their colleagues like that. They actually became devotees through preaching like that. They may not have big positions, but they have some influence on some level. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
You said those two are most important things of Krishna consciousness.
The leader has to be qualified, the people have to be following the proper system.
Which is more important to do first?
When Prabhupada makes this point, and he makes a point on this verse, I was listening to the verse this morning, and Prabhupada gave a lecture in 1976 on this verse. He goes right to that point as soon as he reads the translation. That this is the meaning of this verse. That there should be a balance. He says two things are important. He doesn't put one over the other. Like that. And he gives the example, Ramchandra would not have accepted the throne if the people were not following the Vanashram system. He asked Bart, are they following? And Bart said yes. And then he was willing to. And Prabhupada said if they were not following, he would not have accepted it. That's what Prabhupada said, so the idea was, you know, if the people are not following, then how can you rule? Well, you have to set up a system. But nowadays, it's not possible to set up Vanashram within the materialistic society. Everything's topsy-turvy. We can only do it within the Vaishnav culture. Yes?
What about our society? You know, it looks like in our society everybody wants to be just to Brahmana or Vaishya, you know. Where is the Kshatriyas? Where is the leaders?
Well, that's being discussed. Prabhupada gave many directions. He wanted the Brahmins to lead the society and also teach others how to engage in various types of service accordingly. In other words, train people in the other Varnas also. Not Sudra, but in Vaishya and in Kshatriya. So Prabhupada wanted a kind of Varnashram within our society which is based on spiritual principles. In other words, everyone is serving the Lord. Everyone is a Vaishnav. But one is serving according to Brahminical activities. One is serving according to Kshatriya activities. One is serving according to Vaishya activities. Divisions of labor for the sake of carrying on the social environment within the society. But everyone's a Vaishnava. A balanced society where all the services are covered by people who are qualified to cover those. In other words, training and education is the foundation to bring that about. And not just putting people in different positions and expect them to come up to the standard. There has to be a system of training. So Prabhupada's program was to set up what is called a Vanashram College, where Brahmins teach other Brahmins, and they also teach Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. He makes that clear in the 1974 Morning Walk lecture, and again in 1977. So that's the vision of the society. That's what Prabhupada wanted. So it's not just Brahminical. We start from that position. We train people and come up to the standards of Brahman. But some people never come up to the standard of Brahman. It's just the way, it's just not possible. You know, Prabhupada said Brahman means those who have the qualities of a Brahman, and not simply one is noted as a Brahman because they have Brahminical initiation. The initiation itself helps you to act in that capacity to develop the qualities, or at least you should have some of the qualities as you step into that and then develop those qualities. But it actually consummated in the perfection of that development. One has to act according to their particular, what we say, qualities of that service. But Prabhupada wanted the Brahmins to be leaders, to train others. So he started a Brahminical society, but he wanted these other aspects of Vanashram to come in due course of time. The perfect social system. And we're still struggling how to bring it about. You know, we have people who are doing Brahminical work who have Kshatriya tendencies. And they fight amongst each other. Brahmins don't fight. They'll just offer obeisances to the other Brahmins and go someplace else. But Kshatriyas, they have to rule. It's my way or the highway. That's the Kshatriya mood. Generally. Yes.
I'm just wondering, this process we are doing is supposed to help us evolve the Dominican qualities. So basically, everybody who is chanting Hare Krishna, the actual proof of the process is working for them, is I understand that they are getting this Dominican quality. So it seems now a bit like a dichotomy when you say, I mean, it sounds like it doesn't go together. When we say that some people will never become Brahmanas, if they are actually following the process, they should not become Brahmanas.
We can develop Vaishnav qualities, which are transcendental to all the varnas. Some of those Vaishnava qualities are, you know, foundation for Brahminical qualities. But then again, organization and leadership is more or less the qualities of those who are performing, you know, Kshatriya Dharma. So the point is, I think, Chaturvarna mayastrista guna karma vibhagisaha. Of course, everyone in his age is born in sudra, kalo sudra sambhavan, but with education, training, and devotional service, one's natural proclivities in nature can start to manifest. And then, accordingly, it could be designated in the way for service. When one is working according to their nature, one will excel in that service, and that service will be a great contribution. So, yeah, training is required, because everyone is somewhat influenced by their materialistic upbringing, and therefore those qualities are covered. They're covered. But, you know, everyone has to be able to develop Vaishnav qualities, yeah. You see the difference?
I always understood that the Vaishnava qualities
are Brahminical qualities.
More than they're upwards of Brahminical qualities. That was always my understanding.
Well, if you read the 18th chapter in Bhagavad Gita, the qualities of the different persons are there. But still, we have to execute devotional service. Therefore, humility, tolerance, pridelessness. Lord Chaitanya's formula for chanting the holy name is foundational for spiritual advancement. But one can take on the service of leadership within the society, or even protection. like that. It doesn't mean a kshatriya is not humble because he's a fighter or because he's an organizational person and he has to give instructions and directions. It doesn't mean he doesn't have the quality of humility. It just manifests itself in accordingly. Humility is a state of consciousness, and it's expressed according to one's service and not so much in relationship to, well, Brahmins are humble and Kshatriyas are not so humble. Like that. It manifests different ways, yes.
In that conversation, 1977, when that point was asked, Srila Prabhupada, the Harisari Guru, said, Sri Maharaj, that why is it that we don't have, everyone's not becoming a Brahmin? Because what he probably was talking about establishing Varnashram. But he said, aren't we all just supposed to become Brahmins? And Prabhupada said, well, we're all supposed to be Brahmins. Why is so many devotees falling down?
Yeah. Why are they falling down? Because they're not engaged properly.
Or because it's not that by our process everyone's automatically going to come to the mode of goodness immediately.
Right.
So in the meantime, whatever qualities that are manifested, you know, while they're doing their service, they can be engaged in those particular activities.
Right. Right. And it's up to the leaders. And Prabhupada writes in one purport in the first canto, it's up to the spiritual master and to those who are in the position of leadership to observe those who are under them and train or engage them in training and service accordingly. In other words, help to see, evaluate their nature. He mentions that specifically for the spiritual master to see his disciples and engage them accordingly. Yeah, why are so many people falling down? Prabhupada said it's not so easy to chant Hare Krishna. Yeah. Yes.
There was one devotee in Slovenia who recently wanted a candidate for mayor of one city. And then he saw that he's just insignificant number.
He won the candidate?
Yeah. And then when he saw that he's insignificant number and he doesn't have support from the bigger, then he just...
Well, Prabhupada also said that. Prabhupada made that point that, and he said nowadays, even if you get a good person in there, he can't do anything. Because the system is so corrupt that if he tries to go too much against the system, he gets pushed out. And sometimes killed, depending on what country you're in. Yeah, so yeah. That's why Prabhupada stopped that whole thing. He could see there was a waste of energy to try to capture, you know, for devotees to try to capture positions. Anything else? Yes, Anuradha?
I'm wondering the British politicians, the leaders of the countries, why did we have special schools? How that they would not mislead people to abuse or something?
Why do they have special schools for what?
For developing good qualities, for developing good relationship with people, they can lead them. Why these schools not exist?
They have schools like that. How to make more money? That's their main school. And how to position yourself in such a way as you have those qualities to make more money. That means good planning and learning how to defeat your opponent. Yeah, they have education, but their education is competitiveness. It's not about, you know, the welfare of, in general. It's about your own individual ascent to the to higher levels of social and what we say business positions. Yeah, there's so many schools. How to be a good businessman. How to act in such a way as to keep the business moving. In other words, they also teach you, just like one of the things that businesses are doing now, they've been doing it for a while, is that they have a place where people can come, who are their workers, the employees, they can rest. They encourage them, take some rest during the day. They also have places where they can do some gymnasium and workout like that. They want to give more facilities to the workers so they become better workers. You know, the goal is get more out of the workers by giving these other things that are, that can help them become better workers like that. But what's the goal? So being a nice guy or being a person who is interested in others' welfare only for your own gain. So if you look at society, that's the best they can offer. I want to help you because there's something in it for me. Yes.
Sometimes we see that material success coincides with following some kind of ethics. I mean,
material success comes with coincided with some kind of ethics.
Yeah, many times, I mean, this big businessman.
Yeah, they give in charity too.
But they also more successful are those who treat their employees as
more friendly, caring.
Yes,
it's good business.
But it's also some kind of ethics.
Forced
to follow.
Yeah, I mean, the element of a human being ultimately means to do good to others. So some of those qualities are still prominent, but it's overshadowed by personal motivations. So it does come out in interpersonal relationships. People are generally nice to each other, but it's kind of like an etiquette in order to keep things moving in a certain direction. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about that. The moral, what does he call it? The moral something. I forgot. The modern moralists. That's it. He calls it the modern moral. Those who are nice guys because it's good business to be nice. If it's not good business to be nice, you might find some of them not. And what's the most important thing is personal gain.
It does seem, for example, that Bill Gates is the biggest demon in the world. He's starting many of these projects, like some investing in some vegetarian festival.
Yeah. If you read the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what does Krishna say about the qualities of the demons? They give in charity also. They're one of the biggest charitable, contributors in the world, as many of the big, big corporations. Yeah. But they also, sanction the killing of animals, sanction the killing of babies, so it's kind of a duplicitous type of motivation. On one side, I'm helping some people, on the other side, I'm exploiting somebody. There may be some sentiment there, but if you a person with real character doesn't have personal motivations for their character. Their character is to benefit others. It's about helping and serving others, not about gaining something from being a nice guy. Ramchandra, he refused to, he was destined to get the throne. There was no reason why he shouldn't have got the throne. Everybody wanted him to get the throne. But he lived by the principle obedience to superiors. His father said, or at least his father was forced to say, and he accepted it, that he should go to the forest. So he took the principle of obedience to superiors over his own personal, gain of getting the kingdom. He wasn't attached to position or anything. He was only attached to principles, honesty, righteousness, morality, spiritual activities. In other words, a person who is really a person who is qualified is a person who leads from the position of wanting to do good to those who he leads. So modern day people, they may have some sentiment, but still it's about them. You can't be a materialist if it's not about you. You can't be a good materialist. It's just not, this doesn't work. So material world means, you know, you just trade off and see how much you can get in the trade like that. As Prabhupada calls it, what is it called? The business of thieves. They're all taking the property of the Lord and dividing it up and say, you can have some and I'll have some. But none of it's theirs anyway. It's all, they're just thieves. They're giving in charity. What are they giving in charity? Is it their money? Well, they have possession of it, but it's not theirs. It belongs to the person who created it. The Lord is the source of all wealth. Therefore, devotee has wealth, but he knows it's not his. It's for the service of the Lord. And whatever wealth he doesn't use for the service of the Lord, he uses it so he can keep himself in a position to serve nicely. The devotee is completely free from any personal attachment to anything. But the materialists, they think it's all mine, and if I give some to other persons for another person's benefit, I'm really a nice guy, ain't I? Just see how nice I am. And they get awards for being a philanthropist, or, you know, well, sure, they do so many humanitarian works, and they feel good about themselves. But they just stole Krishna's property and then they're using it for their own interest, maybe to help somebody on a material level. So look at it from the broader perspective like that. I mean, they might not be as bad as Ravana. There's little Ravanas running in around there, but not big Ravanas. Even Ravana was somewhat charitable. So giving in charity is not such, it's not an exclusive quality of good people. It's done by the demons also. See, you still look bewildered. If you read it's in the fifth canto. All right, I got the fifth canto in front of me. I'll read the verse. It's in the fifth canto. Fifth canto, 18th chapter, verse number 18. I think it's 18. No, 12, I'm sorry. Verse number 12. Yashyasti bhakti bhagavati akinchana sarvaigunas tatra samastate sura. Harava bhaktas kato mahagunan manoratena sati dayato bahi. All the demigods and their exalted qualities such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. On the other hand, this is the point, a person devoid of devotional service and engage in material activities has no good qualities. Even if he is adept at the practice of mystic yoga or the honest endeavor for maintaining family and relatives, he must be driven by his own mental speculations and must engage in the service of the external energy of the Lord. How can there be any good qualities in such a person? So that's Bhagavatam. So it says, yeah, material, when you look at the material from the point of view of the nature of what is material, it's based on one's personal interests or one's extended personal interests in the form of my society, country like that. It's motivated by, and therefore this verse and other verses which complement this verse explain that a materialist person cannot have good qualities. Although it looks like it. And if you read the purport, it explains more. Okay? You're still not convinced.
Mistakes in managerial positions, that they have also not pure motivation for it. And then I wonder, maybe somebody with managerial abilities who got a little bit lucky and came
to
became a devotee, and a devotee leader of some kind, then it's only a matter of luck in one sense. I mean,
maybe.
Somebody is lucky, becomes a devotee, doing the same mistakes as he would.
Didn't hear. But there's one thing. Yeah, Prabhupada said, don't criticize someone who's in the shower. He's still dirty, but at least he's in the shower. He's in the process for getting clean. So therefore, in due course of time, if he stays, and then eventually these things will change. But one who doesn't get in the shower for cleanliness will never become clean.
So the one who is accepting Krishna is automatically...
has good quality. Yeah. He may make some mistakes, but it's not so important. And of course, if he's in a leadership position, that should be, should be considered. And maybe he's not qualified to be a leader, but still he's a devotee. Like that. Prabhupada wanted rectification, correction, instead of, you know, condemnation and throwing people out, you know. Give people a chance. Well, none of us are perfect. We come into devotional service. We carry some of our old material baggage with us. But does that mean we're less a devotee? No. We have to work on that, that's all. But one who's not doing anything to change, in other words, one who's still under the influence of material activities, where can they go? They can't go anywhere. They're still within the realm of self-interest. You know, Prabhupada says, you know, a person may be, he wants to free all the, you know, he wants to free all the whales, or he wants to do good for the exploited whales in Iceland. But then again, he eats cow's meat or something. You know, you can't have if you're going to, you know, act as a humanitarian, it can't be partial. Because partial means it's not real. It's motivated by some sentiment. Therefore, a devotee has all good qualities because they're engaged in trying to serve the Lord. And even if their good qualities haven't manifested yet, still they should be seen as, what was it? Apichet sudaracharo, bhajate mamamanyabhak, sadhu eva samantabhyak, samavyahisohisa. That even if a person commits the most abominable activity, if he's engaged in devotional service, he considers to be righteous. Why? Because he's properly situated. Declare it boldly, O Arjuna, my devotee will never perish. So a devotee, because they're engaged in devotional service, even if they make some mistake or do something bad, if they pick up their devotional service, one should not look at them for what that mistake was. They should see them that they are a devotee. Like that. And one who sees like that also is considered to be saintly. Why? Because they're practicing devotional service. That means they're, in due course of time, they will become what we say purified. You see the difference between the two realms?
Yeah.
If there's some discrepancy, there should be some correction, but still the devotee is saintly. Yeah. We have a monitoring system to make sure that those who are in leadership positions are leading in the best, are qualified to lead. If they're not, then some change is made or some rectification is done to help improve like that. I mean, look at our society. We see many leaders have fallen down and disappointed many of their followers. So we're trying to prevent that now through better education and upping the standard, having higher qualities or qualifications for becoming a leader. Now, just to become a devotee now, it's becoming stricter and stricter just to get an initiation. So that's there, and for leaders, that's also, the bar is being raised too, like that. Because Prabhupada started the society just to get things going, and he was training them as he was giving them positions. But now that the society has developed to a certain degree, now we should be more stricter in giving positions and making sure people are qualified when they do have positions. There is a system of monitoring now that's becoming more and more, what we say, enforce like that. You can't cheat anymore and get away with it. But still, if someone makes a mistake by accident or due to past bad habits, that person should not be condemned for that. Because you find if you criticize someone for making a mistake, you'll find that Krishna will put you in a position just to show you how imperfect you are. Oh, you think you're so great? Okay. Here. Yeah. He shows you like that. Yes. We're moving on here. Another question. Okay. Your question was great. It was good. It's a good question. It's an intelligent question. Yes.
We were discussing about Parmashrama a lot in the last months. I would like to ask, what do we need to have Parmashrama? Do we need a farm? Do we need a leader? What do we need?
Where to have Parmashrama? Is that the question? Prabhupada said Vanashram starts in farm communities. If you want to know Prabhupada's program for the society, that's a whole seminar. But basically he said Vanashram starts, you can, simple living, high thinking, does in farm. He said the temples should be preaching forces, not places just to live and do deity worship. It's a place where it's for preaching, for inviting people in, to having programs, to training devotees in education. Deity worship is part of that. But the main thing is education. So temples are educational institutions. And for living, according to Prabhupada's system, Vimaran Ashram, he said the rural communities, the farms, this is where we establish it. Mm-hmm. He said the grihasthas can live on the farms and maintain the farms, develop, self-sufficiency and show the ideal lifestyle, and the temples will be for sannyasis and the brahmacharis, and they can preach and travel like that. Because generally grihasthas have families. So they can't really live in the temple if they have families. They can live around the temple, like that. Brahmacharinis also. brahmacharis, brahmacharinis. Does that answer your question?
The verse also says the people have to follow the national.
Daivi Vanashram, not just Vanashram, spiritual Vanashram. The main goal is service to Krishna. How you serve is according to your different varna. Serve as a Brahmin, servant as a Kshatriya, servant as a Vaishya. Main thing is service. But on the highest platform, when one person gets purified, they can do any service. But you can't start like that. In order to expect to keep people moving in the right direction. Like that. And it balances the society. Therefore you have all services covered when you have the social system. Like that. You have the Brahmins doing the deity worship. You have the Kshatriyas doing the managing, protection, making sure everything, the devotees are getting what everything they need. You have the Vaishyas, you know, making the produce, providing that, making money for the temples, like that. Division of labor. A social structure within a larger spiritual organization. It has to be, or else the spiritual organization has no... You know, if it's just Brahmins, we'll just preach, and then what do we do? That's all. When people come, we won't know how to, you know, engage them. There are some spiritual organizations that are just pyramidical, but they usually don't make people, they just preach. That's all. They don't make followers, and they don't have a large social structure. They're just, more or less sannyasis, renunciates, people who are fully engaged in you know, brahminical activities. But that's not our society. Prabhupada said when society, as society collapses, more and more people will be coming to our farms. And he said then if the farms are equipped, we can engage them in varna, not ashram. He said varna first. Give them some activities, and then gradually you teach them spirituality. Mm-hmm. People need activity. They have to be engaged. Yes?
There was one question. You see, when this is another spiritual organization, you know, they take care for own congregation, you know, also like emotionally, financially, or they take care for young people, you know. But why our organization?
We should do that also. We're not. Yeah, well that's the goal of our organization is to come up to that standard. Where, we call it the devotee care system. It's starting to develop in certain areas, yeah. Everything should be covered. You need to get married, there's a system. You need to get you need some service, there's some system. You need training, you need education, there's a system. You need medical care, you can find it within the devotee society. You need dental care, you need lawyers' help, anything you need to materially and spiritually is meant to be incorporated within the Vaishnava society. That way we don't have to depend on the outside, and that way devotees actually can contribute to building a society based on their own skills like that. That's why Vanashram means education and training, and then as the skills start to develop and the training starts to engage people in different ways, you'll find that you see everything is there. Just like now, if I go around the room, every one of the devotees here have certain qualities and abilities, but how much of these abilities are being used in Krishna's service? Some, but not to the maximum. Like that. Just like I know in some places, if I need medical care, no problem. If I need dental care, no problem. In some places I go, if I need these things, I have a problem. So in some places it's set up, in some places it's not. Well, we have to work on that. Emotional, as you mentioned, if there's some emotional needs also, there should be devotees who can help to bring about that also. Counseling. What else is the other? Conflict resolution. When devotees have a problem amongst themselves, you're brought to a group of devotees who listen to the problems and give some decision like that. And everyone abides by the decision. Prabhupada was talking with Vishnujan Maharaj. Vishnujan Maharaj was saying in New Vrindavan they have a council of elders that acts like a law governing counselor. Something goes wrong in the community, it goes to the group, and the group sits there and decides on how to deal with the situation. So Prabhupada wanted all these things, because if we don't, then devotees go outside for these things and get back involved with their material activities. Yeah. So they call it the devotee care system. I mean, you can find, there are temples that are doing it. Some are doing it more than others, and some are not doing it at all. Right now, in this community you have here, with your congregation, you have so much talent and skills. It's amazing. You have everything here for a complete society. You don't even need to go anywhere outside. You just have to bring those resources in an organized way. How to do that, that's a big plan. It's there. There are so much skills and abilities, talents, professions. I'm sure some of the brahmacharis sitting here, you know, have many skills that they don't even talk about that they can do, right? They may be good at, you know, they had training and education in schools before they came and are not using it now. That could be used also. Yeah, this is the social aspect of our society, to cover all areas. You're right, we're not doing it. We're not doing it enough, but it's becoming a concern now. Like this, I'll give you an example. I was in London, and I was eating breakfast, and I have this tooth that's a little broken. So I bit into a nut. Crack. I broke my tooth. So, okay, give me the phone. Called up. Hey, Krishnakirtan, you got any time in your dental office today? Yeah, come on in, Maharaj. I'll fix you up. 3 hours later, I had a new tooth. 3 hours later. Yeah, a devotee who's a dentist. Serving devotees like that, yeah. Yeah. No, not because I'm a Maharaj. He would have did it for any devotee if they would have called him up. No, don't say that. No, that's not true. No, he would have did it for, if it was a devotee who called him up and said he would have gave him an appointment. No, that's not true. Because they do their business and they have their clients, but when it comes to helping devotees, they're there.